This is ESPN 103.7 Lafayette and 104.1 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station. They say good things come in threes.
Cause it's one, two, three.
Time to test that theory. Here is RP3, D'Lo, and Mesh.
Oh, mijo, my crawfish pie, we are here at Walk-On's on Kali Saloon. They've opened up the garage doors on the patio because it's a beautiful Chamber of Commerce type of day, as our friend Jordy Holberg would say. Sunshine is out, nice cool breeze. So why don't you come out and join us here at Walk-On's on Kali Saloon as RP3 D'Lo and Mesh broadcast for the next 2 hours. We got plenty to get to. I'm the big, bald, bearded, and beautiful one, Raymond Parts III, better known as RP3. I'm joined by the son of Iceman, 2 degrees himself. He uses fancy words with ease. Dawson Iserlo. Good day, D'Lo.
Good day. How's it going?
It is going tremendous. And also, we're joined by the man with the best head of hair in sports talk radio in the states of Louisiana, Mississippi. The birthday boy yesterday as
yep,
well.
No longer.
Test drove a Corvette, and he did not get arrested. We're thankful for that. Our buddy James Mesh is here as well. James, good day to you.
Good day. It's a good Friday.
It is an excellent Friday.
Very bright outside. Very sunny.
Very sunny. Beautiful day. Come out. Grab some great lunch, some great beverages here at Walk-On's on Kali Saloon. You can, and then hang out with us as we chop it up for the next 2 hours. We got 2 great guests lined up for you today. We do have the great one himself, right?
Oh, absolutely.
Jim Gozzolo from the Lake Charles American Press to talk all things McNeese. Will Wade's name was mentioned a ton over the weekend in the last week or so, but it looks like he's staying put and coming back for another year, as he's been telling everyone that's asked him about that, by the way, that the American gangster Will Wade is coming back for another year in Lake Chuck. So we'll talk about all things McNeese with Jim Gozzolo, who will be joining us. And then we're going to head out to H-Town. Woo! Them Astros have been on the struggle bus in a big way. One of their worst starts in modern history. We'll get a ray of sunshine, so to speak, from our buddy Brett Chansey from the Locked On Astros podcast. He'll be joining us today as well. Those are the 2 guests that we have. But you know what? Let's take a moment here and head back to the EVCO Development Studios, because our guy, Blake Purser, better known as BP, has been manning the ones and twos on Kevin Foote's show. He's going to be producing us today, as always. BP, how are you, bud?
Doing pretty good. It's a beautiful day outside. Good day for baseball.
It's a beautiful day outside.
Yep.
And you can tell how great it is back there in the EVCO Development Studios with all those windows you can look out of.
Oh, yeah, it's beautiful. My one window, I can see Foote for like an hour a day, and then it's just an empty desk. It's stunning.
It's just a sad, empty desk is all it is. It is amazing. We're broadcasting live here at Walk-On's on Kali Saloon. BP, appreciate you manning things back in the EVCO Development Studios. And we'll get with you a little bit later about the poll question of the day. But let's start off things like we always do at this time with our today's specials.
The fellas can't help you with your lunch plans, but they can serve up the top stories of the day in bite-sized pieces.
Order up.
Time to order up today's specials on RP3, D'Lo, and Mesh.
Day one at the Masters was an eventful one. They started out with a delay. It was 2 hours later than initially scheduled, which was actually best-case scenario in some regards. It was looking for a while like this weather was going to knock out a whole half a day. That was not the case. And overall, it got things going at Augusta National around 9:30 Central Time. So from there on out, it was Bryson DeChambeau stealing the show early on here. We've seen DeChambeau have some success at Augusta National. He, of course, famously referred to it as a par 67 for him a few years back, and then went on to walk those comments back and certainly regret making them, because he did not play that well in those last couple seasons when he made those comments. But since then, he has gone on to live golf and has changed his ways in some regards. And he started out red hot. 3 birdies in 3 holes, was 3 under par right away. Then he struggled, though, on the rest of the front nine. Really didn't make any moves, actually dropped a shot. But that was before catching fire on the back nine and eventually setting the mark at 7 under par for the first round, a scoring total that we expected to hold the lead. It would have held the lead without any threats until Scottie Scheffler took the course, and of course the world number one had something to say about that. He was just consistent and solid all day. No bogeys, made 6 birdies, But he did not find a way to get to that 7-under mark that DeChambeau had set. And then, of course, we weren't able to finish the first round entirely because of that 2-hour delay. Darkness set in. Not a massive field at the Masters, one of the more exclusive on the tour with just 89 players. But players like Tiger Woods were not able to finish. That left him to have 6 holes left to pick up with this morning. So Woods, who shot 1-under in his round yesterday, partially completed it, got out there really early. They started things out, I think, before 7 in the morning today. And from there, it was an opportunity early on for Scottie Scheffler and those guys to sit back and watch the rest of the first round get finished. And that was what Tiger did. And he struggled, made 2 bogeys, finished 1 over. The rest of the first round was able to be completed. Second round underway right now. And Tiger, for those interested, is even par, but he's done it with 2 birdies and 2 bogeys and 2 pars through 6 holes. So he's had an eventful second round so far. Overall, at the top of the leaderboard, we're waiting to see if someone can make a charge at DeChambeau. And the early indication is Max Homa might have something for him. Homa, of course, the social media star, very popular. And he's now gotten to 7-under after posting a first-round 5-under par score, 2-under already through the first 6 holes here of round number 2. So he sits there at 7-under alongside DeChambeau, who will tee off in just a couple of minutes. Scottie Scheffler will wait. He'll have an afternoon tee time closer to 1 o'clock. So it's going to be an interesting day here. We'll see. They say you can't win this tournament on Thursday, but you can lose it. A couple of guys put themselves behind the eight ball. Ricky Fowler, Phil Mickelson, both over par, looking to kind of bounce back a little bit. Jordan Spieth has had a disastrous second round, and he is now 7 over. Sam Burns, the former LSU golfer, 8 over. Both those guys really struggling. The course is biting back today. It's firming up. The winds are still kicking. So it's going to be a difficult day, and I would imagine, if I have to make a guess, I think no one gets past 7-under. I'm not even sure that lead holds, I'll be honest with you, the way the course is playing right now. So should be interesting to see who can move up the boards and who is a competitor heading into the weekend. A reminder, I'll have a round 2 recap. Round 1 recap is up on ESPNSouthwestLouisiana.com right now. And day 2, recap will be up at some point late this evening once they finally get things going. They're going to try and get all of round 2 in today, assuming there's no, rain that comes through, which I don't think they're expecting any. They should be able to get it, and they'll be caught up heading into a full weekend to make cuts and have everybody try and go for the green jacket.
And then going from golf, we move over to the hardwood for basketball. I want to look at the New Orleans Pelicans because they had a pretty crucial game last night against the Sacramento Kings, of course, coming off that win against the Trailblazers on Tuesday night. Last night in Sacramento against the Kings, they have had really good success all season. We had talked about it on yesterday's show, but it was really crucial that you really needed to do it once again and end the season undefeated against the Kings to make sure that you stayed ahead of the Phoenix Suns for the 6th seed in the Western Conference standings for the playoffs because you wanted to avoid the play-in tournament. Well, it felt like the Pelicans were doing just so to begin the game as they started with a 9-0 lead, and then late into the first quarter, by the 2:46 mark of the first quarter, they were up 34-11. Of course, by halftime, they were still leading, and Zion Williamson, he had a somewhat quiet first half. He only had 8 points, but then in the third quarter, he took over. He had 17 points alone and continued to add more to his offensive game because not only did he get to the paint, because that's just his game where he makes acrobatic layups and somehow gets it. Even if he misses, he'll get his offensive rebound and put it back for an easy layup. But he's added more to his game a little bit. I remember he went for a right hook, right-handed hook shot for the and one. You don't see that because he's dominant with his left hand. And then he also had a stop-and-pop mid-range shot, so he started to add a little bit to his game. I know he's taken a couple three-pointers every so often, and it hasn't been a lot throughout the season, but it's something that over time, if you can add more to his game in that sense, it becomes so much more effective once he gets into the paint because you have to worry about not only the mid-range, even the three-point range. We'll see if he'll ever be able to get to that point in his career, but as of right now, it's starting to expand more and more, and even then, you saw a couple of interesting lineups for Willie Green because I know that Larry Nance, he was not able to be available for this game because of personal reasons, so it gave an opportunity for Jonas Valanciunas to have more minutes, and he definitely did have more minutes in this game, but that led to an opportunity for Cody Zeller, of all people, to get on the floor and play the five a little bit, and it added to some interesting lineups because one example of a lineup that was on the floor at one point was Jose Alvarado at the one, Dyson Daniels at the two, C.J. McCollum at the 3, Trey Murphy at the 4, and then Cody Zeller at the 5. And even though it was an interesting lineup that Willie Green went with, it still was effective because at one point, once you got into the third and fourth quarter, the Pelicans, even though they had their lead diminished and it got down to a 4-6 point game late in the third, early in the fourth, they were able to expand it back to a 20-point lead late. However, Keegan Murray for the Kings, he was able to knock down a couple threes. De'Aaron Fox was effective throughout the whole game, and they got it somewhat close again. But late in the game, the Pels were able to put out their starting lineup once again, and they were able to get the 135-123 win, improving to 48-32 on the season, now going a full game ahead of the Phoenix Suns. Jonas Valanciunas, he did play more minutes, but Cody Zeller, he was one of those guys that really made effective plays when he really needed to. It's not like he stood out and had 15 points off the bench with 7 rebounds, but he made plays for other guys to be able to be more effective, because I remember he had a screen on Domantas Sabonis to where he wasn't able to get to him, and it led to an easy layup for Zion. A lot of crucial plays for the Pelicans late in the ball game. Zion finished with 31, 13 of 21 from the field. C.J. McCollum, of course, he was money all game long, especially in the fourth quarter. He finished with 31 as well, 11 of 18 from the floor, and then 9 of 12 from three. He's been on fire over the last couple of games from three-point range, and hopefully he's able to carry that into the playoffs. But as you look at it, Pels now a full game ahead of the Phoenix Suns, and they only got a couple of games left against the Los Angeles Lakers at home in a couple of days. But before that, they have to take on the Golden State Warriors, which you feel a little bit better about, especially if they're able to continue the play that they've been able to have over the last couple of games.
My special for today on this glorious, beautiful, sunny, slightly breezy Friday is Kentucky has found their man. Mark Pope is officially the new men's basketball coach for the Kentucky Wildcats. Big Blue Nation, not happy. Big Blue Nation, not happy. They're not happy right now. The message boards were a thing of beauty. If you know any Kentucky men's basketball fans in your life, reach out to them. It will be at least entertaining to see their responses about what has occurred. After having Hurley from UConn publicly state that he wasn't interested in the Kentucky job, after Nate Oates publicly saying that he was happy being at Alabama and not going to Lexington to take over the Kentucky Wildcats, who have won the second most national championships in college basketball history on the men's side. And then to have Drew from Baylor say, I'm going to hang out with Chip and Joanna Gaines. I'm not leaving Waco. My family's here. We're good to go. I'm not going there. They settled on a former team captain for the 1996 national championship team. So he's part of the Big Blue history, right? Won a national title. Got the vote of confidence from Rick Pitino, the former national championship winning head coach for the Kentucky Wildcats. And look, I'd like to point out that I know a lot of Blue Nation folks not happy because this guy's record isn't great, doesn't have a ton of experience in big games and tournament games. But, you know, as Seth Davis pointed out on X, Coach K, before he was hired at Duke, he went 9-17 at Army. Roy Williams was the third assistant at UNC when he was hired by Kansas, right? Tom Izzo had never been a head coach when he was hired at Michigan State. Jay Wright never won a tourney game at Hofstra before moving on to Villanova. So multiple examples here of guys with not a ton of success being able to win at the highest level, win national championships. But he comes in with 9 years as a head coach, fifth place or worse in conference 5 times in his career, second place 4 times, has won 0 regular season championships in his career, 0 conference tournament titles in his career, has been to the NCAA tournament not once but twice, lost both times in the very first game. So the resume is not awesome if you're a Kentucky fan. And the reason why it's not awesome is because you have a level of expectations. Yes, coaching at Utah Valley and then BYU, do you have the best facilities? No. Do you have massive NIL money? No. Do you get the best recruits there? No, especially not at BYU because of the restrictions you have there because of their mission trips. And you have to go out there and roll out 25-year-old guys to play basketball. So all that is true, right? But here's the other part of it. Even Billy Gillespie had at least one Sweet 16 appearance on the resume before he got to Kentucky. Tubby Smith had three before he took over for Kentucky. The other three of their last five head coaches had at least a Final Four prior to coaching in Lexington. And that's why Blue Nation, Big Blue Nation, is upset because, yes, here's a guy who played 2 years at Kentucky, was a team captain, was part of their 1996 national championship team. He began his career playing at Washington, by the way, where he was the Pac-12 Freshman of the Year. Okay, so he has ties to the university, has ties to the program, but his head coaching resume, not great. Winning percentage, not great. Doesn't have a lot of postseason tournament success. And what do they judge you at when you're the Kentucky head coach? They just ran John Calipari out of town after 15 years because he only won one national championship. They got rid of Tubby Smith because he only won one national championship. They got rid of Billy Gillespie because he couldn't even get to a championship game. Is this the guy that's built for this? It's a huge question mark. It feels a little Mike Shula being hired as the Alabama football coach about 25 years or so ago. That didn't work out when you went and got yourself a former player. Not a great player. He was just a former player. So, Big Blue Nation, give him a hug because I feel like they need it. Now, this guy could end up being – set the world on fire, right? He could end up being the next great coach. But for what Kentucky fans expect out of their program – they're not thrilled today. We got to take a timeout. When we come back here on RP3, D'Lo and Mesh, we'll unveil our poll question of the day and we'll react to our specials of the day by one another. That's all coming up next right here on ESPN Southwest Louisiana Sports Station.
You're listening to ESPN 1037 Lafayette and 1041 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's Sports Station, your home for the Houston Astros.
We welcome you back into RP3, D'Lo and Mesh here. We are live at Walk-Ons on Kalisum. Another beautiful day here. I mean, what a stretch of weather we've been having. And these are the days you got to enjoy, by the way, because it's April 12th. I mean, give it about a month, we'll be sitting at about 90 degrees at this point. So while it's nice and 75 and breezy, I would sure take advantage of it. And Walk-Ons is certainly a place you can do that. We got games on the TV. Of course, they'll be having, I'm sure, the Masters throughout the day here, throughout the different televisions. And then, of course, once the baseball gets going, that'll be on here as well. So I wanted to talk first. Let's go to Ray's special, right? He talks about the Kentucky hire, Mark Pope. This is interesting. I might be one of the only people in the world who has a lot of experience, well, not in the world, but maybe in this area, that knows a lot about Mark Pope. Because I've told the story before, I randomly followed Utah Valley basketball since about 2017. Mark Pope was the head coach of the Utah Valley Wolverines at the time. Mm-hmm. He then used that job, which he did a really nice job, kind of building a program a little bit. Left, again, before he had major success, he left. And ended up going to BYU, which is where he's been since then. That's not the only coach that's used Utah Valley as kind of a springboard. Mark Mattson did the same thing. He's now the head coach at Cal, and he's already been getting extension offers. He's done a great job with Cal, the former Los Angeles Laker. My point there is I do know Mark Pope, and I think he has a good style of basketball. His teams are disciplined. They play defense hard. He usually, from the teams I've watched him, has one or two really reliable scorers that he likes to lean on as well. And, at times that maybe can be some of their downfall, at least some of those Utah Valley teams, which, again, that's a long time ago for him, 4 or 5 years. So it's interesting. And clearly to me, look, the resume, I hesitate to be super result-oriented, right? And you go, look at the resources he has at BYU versus what he's going to have at Kentucky. It's not even close, right?
No.
The competition,
so much more.
Playing in the West Coast Conference, you got to deal with Gonzaga, who has different resources, different expectations than everyone else in your conference. And St. Mary's has outperformed BYU as well in the last 4 or 5 years. But they've been that third team. They've been consistently in and around the NCAA tournament. They've been in the postseason before. But two round of 64 exits, I understand the concern there. And it just doesn't feel like a Kentucky basketball hire, right? Now, we haven't had a whole lot of Kentucky basketball hires because Cal was there for a very long time. But it is not the level of name that I would have expected, and it's not a guy that I expected to take that big of a jump. I thought he had some work left to be done at BYU, in my own opinion. So, yes, to a lot of what you said there, it's a surprising move. But, again, felt a little bit like Alabama football, right? The first two big fish say no. Well, now we're starting to scramble here. We're running out of bait, right? And the transfer portal timing windows the way they are, you got to put somebody in that office. Somebody's got to be sitting in that chair.
It does also beg the question, did they not want to wait on Billy Donovan to complete his season because the Bulls are in the play-in? They're going to be in the play-in tournament in the East. So did they not want to wait till that was resolved? Now, we've heard rumblings that the Bulls and Billy were kind of looking at parting ways, I guess because of the transfer window, the transfer portal window that's set up in recruiting, that you couldn't wait on them. But, I mean, or did Billy just say, hey, you know what? I was a college coach. I love my time that was at Kentucky. I love my time that I was spent at the SEC as the head coach of the Florida Gators. But I'm a pros coach now. I'm an NBA coach now, and this is what I want to do. And I don't want to go back to college and have to deal with, by the way, when Billy Donovan was in college, there was no transfer portal. There was no NIL. And we know a lot of veteran coaches are stepping away from coaching and are moving on from coaching because of the era that we live in now with the NIL and the transfer portal. So did Billy say, you know what, I love y'all, but I'm not coming back to college?
I don't know. I think so. I think feels if I had though, to guess, right? Yeah. I just don't know if you make this hire with that name as a strong possibility. You know what I mean? That's where I struggle with it. But either way, you know, look, again, it's funny, too. We're going to see this with Kalen DeBoer. You go, well, there wasn't a whole lot of track record at Washington, right? It was a one-year thing. But then you also argue on the other hand, okay, but he didn't even have near the resources that he's going to have at Alabama. But then you talk about the level of competition he's going to be facing. There's a lot that goes into it, right? And Kentucky still does have the advantage in the SEC that they care about basketball more than the rest of the SEC, right? I mean, I don't think that's debatable. Like, they definitely do because it's football country. And LSU, as much as LSU wants to win in men's basketball, they're always going to prioritize football over it. And as much as, you know, Auburn or Alabama or Georgia wants to win in basketball, those schools are still always going to put football in front of it. So Kentucky doesn't. I would assume they put basketball in front of the, you know, I mean, they've
basketball's at the forefront of
everything. They've been ecstatic
they do.
With Mark Stoops winning 8-9 games a year. And that's not a slight at Mark Stoops. He's done a really nice job there. But all that being said, I don't know if it's the name that Kentucky fans are excited about, but obviously, you're going to have to give him a chance here, and
he
I would imagine
the guy. He could be the guy.
He could be.
We don't know. Now,
his teams have always. I'll say this: his teams haven't necessarily overachieved, done incredible things. They've always been very good. He's never had a team that was bad in his entire head coaching career.
So it's going to be interesting to see, and it's going to be interesting to see, just like the Billy Napier hire at Florida for football, and we talked about it. Are the Gator fans and the supporters and the boosters going to be patient because it's going to take a while? I can guarantee you that the Kentucky basketball fans are not going to be patient. If they struggle to be barely above 500, if they get bounced early from the tournament or something like that, they are going to be screaming from the mountaintop.
Well,
I'm telling you.
And here's the other thing. You want to talk about a difference in approach? I mean, Mark Pope has not thrived on putting lottery picks in the NBA draft in his career, right?
He has been
it's BYU and it's Utah Valley. He has thrived on taking maybe under-recruited, overlooked players who are super, you know, team-oriented, building that chemistry, building rosters for 3-4 years. So maybe in some regards, that's Kentucky telling you we're kind of sick of doing what Calipari's been doing. Maybe we're trying to go the other approach.
More of a traditional kind of
build up
approach,
a roster like what you see, you know, at times with Bill Self's team, even though he has utilized the one-and-dones here and there. But those Kansas teams have had veteran players lead the way. UConn has had players now stay and lead. Maybe that's their kind of way of saying we want a change of approach here as well.
Could be. It definitely could be. I want to circle in on what you had to bring up about the Masters. We're seeing some live coverage right now here inside Walk-On. So, look, if you want to come out, hang out with us, and watch a little bit of the Masters, it is on the big screen TVs here inside the patio area and inside the bar area. Tiger went ahead and gave a stroke back. He, last time I checked, was 2 over. So he's going to be in danger of possibly missing the cut, and especially with the way DeChambeau and Scheffler did day one. To your point about, you know, you can lose on the first day, right? You can lose the Masters on the very first day. You don't win it, but you can lose it. And that said, there's some bigger names that I look at and go, wow. Like, you just kind of go, okay, wow.
Yeah.
Like, and you're kind of surprised.
Jordan Spieth is now 7 over par. The funny thing is his second round, he's even through 6, but he ended up finishing up this morning and having a meltdown 9 on one hole.
Unbelievable.
So he shot a 79 in his first round of competition. And
it is phenomenal where his game has gone. Like, he was the best golfer on the face of the planet. for, what, about a year and a half?
Yep.
And then it just went away. And
he's had his moments.
He's had his moments. But, you know, people, we're going through that phase. Oh, and DJ, Dustin Johnson, plus eight through five. He's tied for 82. So some big names not going to be making it. I just, you know, Spieth and JT, those are those guys that are like, oh, these are the young guys. These are the Tiger disciples. They're going to be the next. And they've had some nice moments. But, man, they are a struggle. How about Max Homa, though, huh?
Yeah.
He's two under through seven. He's up now tied at the top of the leaderboard.
And Max has not had a ton of success in the majors. That's kind of been, you know, a bit of a topic of conversation. The other thing, by the way, Woods actually might be okay. Two or three over we were thinking was going to be the cut line. Now with the carnage, the winds have really picked up. You're already looking at four over, maybe even five over being the cut line. So he's going to still have to play solid down
still
the stretch here.
Yeah, he's still going to have to finish strong because right. That's the problem.
But, you know, the other thing I wanted to bring up when you said it about Spieth, and it's why I'm just hesitant with the Scheffler stuff, and I struggle with it, because if you watch Scottie Scheffler right now, and there are some numbers, there's some different things if you get into it that he's putting up that even Spieth didn't necessarily do. But we saw Jordan Spieth look like the next Tiger Woods for a year. We saw Rory McIlroy look like the next Tiger Woods for a five-year stretch, or at least a three-year stretch. And we saw, you know, the same thing with Justin Thomas for a year. Can a guy like Scheffler sustain it for a decade? And Tiger did it for two decades, right? And that's what made him, you know, obviously he's one of the greatest, if not the greatest of all time, right there with Jack. So I always have that in the back of my mind about Scottie Scheffler. I mean, the wheels can – it's a game. It's not like – football or basketball where we can see the steady decline, right? Okay, he just doesn't quite have that burst. He doesn't quite have it.
It can go off the rails.
You can lose it on a Tuesday.
And you look at this, you know, there's Jordan tied for 78, seven over. Sam Burns had a monstrous first round of 80. He likely will not make the cut. The former LSU star DJ, we already told you, tied for 82. So we'll keep an eye on that. Projected cut line is still plus two, but to Dawson's point, the way the course is starting to play today over in Augusta is going to make a huge difference. Before we got to take a quick timeout, let's head back to the EFCO Development Studios. BP, can you give us an update on the poll question of the day? On Fridays, it's always our foodie poll question of the weekend. It was inspired by someone's birthday dinner that occurred last night, one and only James Mesh.
Yes, so the foodie poll question of the week is, what do you choose to eat for a birthday dinner? Steak leading the way, 51.9% of the vote. I don't think that's too surprising. Crawfish in second place at 18.5%. Sushi at 16.7%. Don't like that option. And other at 13% of the vote.
We're going to circle back to that. We do have to take a timeout right now because our guy Jimmy G from LC is waiting on the line here. We'll talk to him after the break, and we'll get back to that poll question at a later date. This is RP3 D'Lo and Mesh.
You're listening to ESPN 1037 Lafayette and 1041 Lake Charles, your home for the best local sports talk in Southwest Louisiana.
We welcome you back into RP3 D'Lo and Mesh, broadcasting live from Walk-Ons on Kali Saloom, as we do each and every Friday. It is time for the best 15 minutes of sports talk radio in all of Acadiana, potentially all of the world. It's because Jim Gazzolo is coming on to our radio program to talk about the McNeese Cowboys. Jim, how have you been, my friend?
I'm doing fine, but that's way too much hype. Way too much hype.
Oversell, underdeliver sometimes is the way to go, Jim. So even if you're not your best, we'll still accept it.
I can, okay. As long as my personal bar is low, we're good.
Okay. Well, someone's bar is very high, and that's Will Wade's over at McNeese with what he's done in year number one there with the Cowboys basketball program. And I imagine McNeese faithful had some moments of trepidation the last couple of days as big name after big name turned down the Kentucky job, and you start to do the math going, how many names would it be until Will Wade started getting some really serious phone calls? But they did go in a different direction. They go with Mark Pope from BYU. Was there ever any doubt for you? Did you start to think maybe this is going to be an opportunity for Wade, or were you pretty confident he was staying put?
I'm pretty confident I have been pretty confident all along he was staying put, because he changed his tone to us pretty much the last month. Before that, he would always say, I never say never, I never say always when answering the question, he'd be back. the last month he said, I will be back next year at McNeese, and he never wavered on that. He says he never talked to Arkansas. He said nobody's ever contacted him. So you got to take that. I don't think Kentucky was ever in ever had him down as a possible.
Well, now he can start to shift his focus fully, or I guess he never has changed, but we can go back to thinking about what this roster is going to look like next year. So after the Joe Charles move, we know that kind of settled a little bit of the dust there. How many moves are left here, in your opinion, on this roster? Is there something still big to happen, or do you think with all the returners plus Joe, that might be it for them?
No, there's five or six that are going to be replaced. They lost, I think, I want to say they lost three to the portal. Obviously, Shahadi Wells is gone. Cullum is gone. So I think they have, with Berzay gone, I think they have five or six scholarships still open. And he wants to go big. he needs big personnel. Joe Charles is one of them. I think he'd like to get another big to play defense inside, especially because they saw that weakness with Gonzaga, that they just didn't have the physical bodies to match up, and they had to double down, and they couldn't cover the threes. So that's his big thing. And I think he also wants to improve the point guard position, get someone who can shoot the basketball from the point guard as well.
We're talking with the great one, the most humble man in sports media in the state of Louisiana. Jim Gazzolo joins us here on RP3, D'Lo and Mesh. All right, but I want to shift gears to the Diamond. Look, Lamar is nothing to sneeze at. They have been beating teams from larger conferences this year, and the baseball team out of Beaumont was able to take 2 of 3 from McNeese. Cowboys did take that Friday night game. And then they follow that up with having LSU get all of its aggression and frustrations out on them on Tuesday in a 16-0 loss there that was thankfully called in 7 innings. What do you make of where Justin Hill's team is right now as they gear up for a big series against Incarnate Word as they sit 16-15 overall and 2-4 in Southland play?
Yeah, that's an interesting one because forget the LSU game, which actually kind of, I guess, helped because they only had to pitch 6 pitchers. Nobody was overtaxed. Everybody threw an inning. But the weekend against Lamar was kind of what we expected. Very good starting pitching for both teams. Not a lot of hitting. Not a lot of hitting from McNeese, which is the issue. So I think that's the question you have, is do they have enough hitting? Because I think their starting pitching is good enough. They did lose 2 games in walk-off fashion, including losing the last one to lose the series in the 9th. So I think there's still some bullpen work that needs to be done, but they got to find some consistent offense, somebody that can hit the ball out of the ballpark, especially on a weekend like this one where the wind's supposed to be blowing out here at the Joe. So there's going to be some runs scored. McNeese kind of hopes they get some of those.
At the Joe, that's short for Joe Miller Ballpark. When you're the king of all sports media in the Lake Chuck, you only refer to things by nickname. You don't have to spell it out for everyone. Jim,
okay. The Joe, the Chuck, we shorten everything up.
There we go. They're at the bottom of the Southland Conference standings as we interplay. Now, look, there's still a little bit more than a month of season left, still plenty of series on the docket, so to speak, but Incarnate Word's right there with them 2-4 in conference play. How important is it for Justin Hill's team to start turning a corner by taking, you know, not sweeping Incarnate Word, but at least taking 2 of 3 and kind of started getting back in the right direction in the standings?
Yeah, I think it's important. I think it's really important that, look, in both the series that they've had 2 conference series, they've won the first games and then could not win either one. In fact, they lost 3 of the 4 games in the last innings. I think the last at-bat for Northwestern State won them a game, and the last 2 at-bats at Lamar. So the issue is they're close, but they don't give – because of the offense, they don't give themselves any room for error. And that's the problem, is it catches up with them in the back end. They have to kind of figure out how to finish games off. But really, I think the biggest thing is when they get a lead – this is a team that has to find a way to extend that lead and add on some runs so that there's some margin for error in the back end of their bullpen.
We're talking with the great one here on the Mike's Marine Hotline. Jim, I want to move over to softball because they've been looking pretty good so far. They're 26-15 on the season. They won all three games last weekend against Lamar. But this weekend they have to go on the road against Texas A&M Commerce. Now, the softball team is only 7-6 on the road, but overall in conference play, they're 11-1. What kind of preview can you give us against this matchup against the Lions?
Well, this should be a good matchup for them to be on the road. The Lions are 0-15 in the conference and only have 7 wins on the year. So McNeese really has to focus on themselves. The big difference with them is they're starting to get their pitching lined up, especially for the weekends. Saunders has kind of taken over the number one realm. The two freshmen, Mundane and Dibley, have learned how to play in the middle of the order. They hit 3 and 4, and they're 1 and 2 in batting average. They've kind of established what they've lost. This is a team that lost its starting center fielder, lost its starting catcher, number four hitter, lost its ace pitcher. I think it took especially some time against the good programs they played, the top 25s. It took some time for the freshmen to kind of catch up. But now they've caught up, and they're playing much better because of that. But I think the big thing this weekend is just take their game seriously and not play against the other team's record, which is 0-15.
Do you kind of change up your game plan a little bit whenever you have to play a doubleheader? Because they're playing 2 out of the 3 games tonight. Game one is at 5, game 2 is at 7, and then they play tomorrow at 12 p.m. So a pretty quick turnaround for all 3 games.
Yeah, James Landrieu said this week he would rather do the doubleheader on Saturday, with the exception of he gets home a little earlier on Saturday night instead. But because it was such a long trip to Commerce, they drove up anyway on last night, so they're already there. It's not like they're driving in for the game like it would be at Lamar or something. So I don't think it's as big a deal because of that. But I think he would prefer to have the doubleheader on Saturday, just because you kind of set your rotation a little bit better off. You may not lose all your pitchers right away on the first day. You hope that your ace can go deep into the game and then everybody's set up for the doubleheader on Saturday. Whereas in this case, it's a little bit reversed because you might have to use more pitchers on the first day.
Jim, I got one more for you before we let you go. Thank you for being so gracious with your time. We know you're a big-time sports media figure there in the Chuck. And I would want to ask you about your Chicago White Sox being 2-10 and the second worst team in Major League Baseball, but I'm not going to do that to you, only behind the Miami Marlins.
You can. I have no problem with discussing the debacle that is, but okay.
I want to ask you about our poll question of the day. It's our foodie poll question of the week, bud, okay? And it's inspired by our guy James Mesh. He had his birthday yesterday. By the way, turned 24.
I saw that.
Yeah, young pup he is. He decided to go out for dinner and to celebrate his birthday by getting a big fancy dinner of sushi. So our poll question of the day what do you prefer? What's your jam? Would you prefer steak? Would you prefer maybe going the James Mesh route and going with the delightful sushi? Or, is it something else? Is there another besides sushi, steak, boiled crawfish? What do you think?
If given my options, I'm going to go with ribs. I'm going to go with good barbecued ribs. Messy, something you can really sink your teeth into. I'm going to pass on the sushi, though. A little bit light for my generation. I'm going to go with the big something that really clogs the arteries, ribs.
There you go, bud. I appreciate your candor, and I appreciate you being supportive of the old way of eating, not this new hipster way of eating, trying to be healthy and stuff like that, that James and Dawson do. They prefer the sushi. I need meat, and I need red meat. Thank you.
Yes.
Thank you, bud. Appreciate your time.
All right. We'll see you next week.
It's James. It's Jim Cazzolo of the Lake Charles American Press joining us here on RP3 D'Lo Mesh. We got to take a timeout. When we come back, we'll get an update on that poll question. We'll throw it back to the EFCO Development Studios to our guy BP. That's all coming up next right here on ESPN Southwest Louisiana Sports Station.
Go sign up for our Rewards Club at ESPNSouthwestLouisiana.com so you can score tickets, gift certificates, and much more. This is ESPN 1037 Lafayette and 1041 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station.
I got to quickly, I know we're getting to Blake with our update. Tiger just hit a stinger of a four iron into the crowd. And, I mean, I hope that young fan is okay because they got blasted with a Tiger line drive hitting out of the pine straw. Man, you never know. You better have your head on a swivel if you're out at Augusta walking the grounds.
What a moment for that young man. That'll be a memory.
Yeah, and young man, young woman. I didn't even see who it actually hit, but.
Let's hope there's not no head injury, but maybe
right,
it's
no
just a big old
damage.
A big old bruise on the leg or something like that. Maybe
that's something
that would have to go
framed.
A little low.
I mean,
could you keep the ball if you get hit by?
Well,
if
I think
you get hit with the golf ball. Do you get to keep it?
Well, no, yeah, it depends on the golf. They have to play it as it lies, of course. Now, the golfer, once they finish the hole out, is going to have the opportunity to go over there,
and which they should.
You've seen in the past, golfers usually, you know, they'll sign a glove, they'll sign, you know, give them a ball, something like that afterwards, but. Honestly, the funny thing about, and again, all jokes aside, hope the fan is okay. It's a break for Tiger because that ball was going to go a lot farther than it did, but it's kind of use it as a backstop. I don't know if you plan to use the gallery as a backstop usually, but either way,
second round of the Masters. Let's quickly head back out to the EFCO Development Studios. Welcome on BP to give us an update on our poll question of the day. What are the latest results, Mr. Purser?
So on the footy poll question of the week on what do you choose to eat for a birthday dinner, steak still leading the way, 51.8% of the vote. So not much has changed. I think crawfish had a little bit of an uptick to 19.6%, sushi at 16.1%, and other at a lowly 12.5%.
So there you go. People are reasonable with their votes today, which is good to see. Which is good to see. You drink the fancy coffee. You enjoy the sushi. You got a little bit of a hipster vibe to you. It's okay.
There's
know?
Just a certain demographic, and it's been further confirmed of people. And I guess I don't know what kind of anti-sushi propaganda was being run at some point in you all's childhood.
Well, first of all, it wasn't around. Not
well, right.
Really.
It wasn't as popular as kind of culturized here, and it's certainly been adopted in the popularity.
Yeah, over the last 20 years, it's gotten very, very
but,
popular.
It is, look, it, I enjoy it. I
you,
enjoy,
you enjoy
it a lot.
It's your jam. It's your jam.
It stinks.
You have your fancy coffee and
Blake, that's
your
enough
sushi.
Out of you.
You know, I get it. It's you exercise. You're one of those people. It's
the
fine.
Funny thing
it's
is
fine.
Just hearing the undertones of Blake saying it stinks in the background as you tell me that, but... Either way,
it's like Blake is Ray's hype man right now.
Yeah, it stinks.
Oh, Blake knows what to do to make sure to try to get a permanent position with our station. He's no dummy. Let me ask this. We haven't had a chance to talk about it because it's been a jam-packed edition of RP3 D-Lo and Mesh. How about the New Orleans Saints collecting failed bum quarterbacks? I mean, they got themselves another one.
And failed bum receivers.
Kellen Mond has been a little bit... He's had a lot less failure than Nathan Peterman, but he hasn't had as much opportunity.
I was at the SEC Media Days in Hoover when he made the announcement that he believed that he was the best quarterback in the SEC, and that was a year Joe Burrow and others were playing. So I love the confidence. The young man's got some confidence to his game.
Yeah, there's no shortage of that, but when you watch the play, there's definitely a shortage of that of talent on the field.
Equanimeous St. Brown, he's unfortunately the less accomplished of the St. Brown brothers. Amon-Ra has certainly had more impact in his career, but regardless, you know, journeyman players, played with Green Bay, he's had a couple of good years in the league. But all in all, has been, you know, back of a roster, number four receiver. When injuries happen, he can step up type of player. But again, at this point in free agency, you got to add camp bodies. And I think St. Brown is a camp body. Kellen Mond is much of the same. So
I can't wait for all the New Orleans media to write these enthralling profiles on those guys during training camp and then have them be cut in the second week of the preseason. We got to wrap up hour number one of RP3 T-Lo and Mesh. Hour number two coming up right here on ESPN Southwest Louisiana Sports Station.
This is ESPN 1037 Lafayette and 1041 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station. They say good things come in threes.
Cause it's one, two, three.
Time to test that theory. Here is RP3, D-Lo, and Mesh.
Hour number two of RP3 D'Lo and Mesh. We are live here at Walk-Ons on College Slim. Kind of filling up, to be honest with you. Most of the tables right here with the garage doors open are filling up. Still one, though, down there if you want to get in and claim it. We got a lot of sports on the television. Of course, great food and drinks here. And really, really beautiful weather on a Friday. So we are hanging out, and we'll be here for the next hour. So make sure to come out and say hello. Hour number one was busy, of course, giving some live updates about the Masters. Also talked a lot about some different happenings in the world of college athletics, the McNeese Cowboys with our guy Jim Gazzolo, as well as the hiring that Kentucky made going with Mark Pope as their next basketball coach. It is now time to switch gears to the Houston Astros, and the Astros have certainly had their struggles over the past week. It has not gotten much better after some hope leaving Arlington. The trip to Kansas City was a disaster, and to talk about that and much more is our guy Brett Shancy, H-Town Wheelhouse, you may know him as, of Locked on Astros. Also the Back to the Bullpen show that he has launched with Mike Stanton. But Brett, how have you been, my friend?
Well, you know, I've been great. I love the weather. I love this time of year. It's really one of my favorite times of the year because, you know, we got baseball back. But I can't say that I'm in love with the performance of my favorite team, the Houston Astros, just because this season has come with so many curves and things that you're dealing with now that you should be dealing with toward the end of the season. 4-10, I'm not feeling too good as a fan, but I haven't lost all hope.
Well, let's start with that theme. You just said it, lost all hope. I don't lose all hope much. I tend to be known as the level-headed one, the logical reasoning one, the one who really waits for a lot of data to make decisions. I'm really close to losing all hope in Jose Abreu. I haven't seen a string of uncompetitive at-bats like what Jose Abreu has brought to the table here in a very long time in Major League Baseball, and I've been following it, you know, most of my life here. So, where are you on where Abreu is? Because, again, if he was at least showing me signs of life, I'd be all for it and say, listen, he's a veteran. He's been there before. Give him time. But he hasn't barreled up a baseball via next-gen analytics. He has not barreled up one baseball the entire season. I'm losing hope there.
Yeah, you know, with the Abreu conundrum that the Astros are in simply because of the financial aspect of it, it is pretty much a black hole at first base. We had Brian McTaggart on Back to the Bullpen with Mike and I last night, and he's like, you know, there's not really a whole lot of places to go. You know, what do? Do you put Dubon there? Do you platoon Caratini? Do you put him on the bench and just say you lost your starting job? I mean, Brandon Belt apparently is still out there. You can go get him. But, yeah, he has been a – really not as advertised because they said, oh, yeah, the Abreu we're going to get is the one you saw towards the end of last year, and we're feeling really good about a season this year. And so I was assuming maybe he's going to have a breakout year, and he has broken out. He's basically caused me to break out into tears. That's the only breakout that I've seen. But you know what's odd about this team is when I look at their hits, their doubles, their first in the AL – OPS, their third. Batting average, second. RBI, their seventh. On-base percentage, fourth. Slugging percentage, second. But the problem is not getting them on base. It's bringing them home. 9-43 with runners in scoring positions is not going to win the AL West.
You know, it's been a difficult start to the year, and I guess a little bit of it has been mitigated by the fact that no one in the division is lighting the world on fire right now. We saw Texas struggle with Oakland, and the Astros now have a chance to go back to Arlington and face them. But before we get to that matchup, you know, I guess that's the silver lining, right? Seattle's 5-8. The Angels are 6-6. We don't expect them to be contenders long-term, and the Rangers are only a game above 500. So what have you made of what was tabbed as one of the best divisions in baseball coming into the season, kind of collectively off to a slow start?
Yeah, it is. You know, that's really one of the things that gives you hope. You're like, well, everybody else is kind of meh. I mean, everybody else is kind of average. So, you know, the Astros have their struggles early on. They get it together. They run off a 8-10-game win streak, like Dana Brown said they've got in them. Then they easily take over the division by a few games. And you know, the Rangers, for all the firepower that they're supposed to have in the defending World Series champions, I mean, they got beat by the Oakland A's. So it's not like we went into Kansas City and got beat by a really bad Kansas City team. I'm telling you right now, they are my dark horse for the AL Central this year. I don't know that they win it, but, I mean, yeah, and I don't know that they win it over the other teams in our division, but they've got a really good team. They got good pitching. They got Bobby Witt Jr., who hits out of his mind. At the end of the day, man, they are going to have to figure it out. They are going to have to get in that clubhouse and figure out what it is they need to do. I mean, these pitching mistakes, you know, you understand the two rookies, but Hunter Brown, a historically bad start, and broke a record yesterday that is not a record you want to break. And the amount of hits he gave up without, you know, without an out. And it just seems like everywhere you turn outside of Alvarez hitting and Diaz hitting and some other offensive guys, the Astros just don't have a lot going in the right direction right now.
We're talking with H-Town Wheelhouse, host of the Locked On Astros podcast, Brett Chancy, with us here on the Mike's Marine Hotline. Brett, I did want to ask you about Hunter Brown and specifically look at the pitching situation right now, because that was a less than stellar first inning, like you had mentioned, and it just has not looked good for the overall pitching staff right now. And what kind of direction do you think they go? Because Hunter Brown, that was a very uncharacteristic type of performance.
Yeah, Hunter Brown, you know, I heard that they said he was tipping pitches in the first start. I don't know, was he tipping pitches the second start? And I asked Mike Stanton last night, and Mike said it just looked like, I mean, go look at the hits. I mean, he is hitting the zone middle. And Mike shared this with me. As a veteran pitcher, he said, I look for elevation. And if you're elevating above the zone and getting right below the zone, then you're probably missing bats. But if you're elevating right to the middle of the plate, I mean, these are major league hitters. They're going to hit those baseballs. And that's what Hunter Brown did. He essentially was throwing batting practice yesterday. Is a fix putting him in the bullpen and maybe allowing – look, Seth Martinez, here's an outside-the-box thought for you. Seth Martinez has been phenomenal. Why can't you tab him as a four-inning starter and then bring in Hunter Brown as a bullpen guy? He did really good out of a bullpen. Maybe he needs to be in the bullpen for the majority of the first half. You can piggyback Martinez and Brown, but the only caveat to that is then you lose a very good relief pitcher. So Hunter Brown would have to take over that role and put zeros up, and I don't know that the Astros have that kind of confidence in him. But I'm just trying to think of ways we can fix this thing sooner rather than later.
And I want to look at someone who's a local product, because – Lafayette product and former Louisiana Raging Cajuns pitcher Spencer Arrighetti, he had made his MLB debut the other night, and it started off pretty well, especially with the first two batters striking out both of them, and in the first two innings, he only allowed one hit. However, that third inning is where everything fell on its head. What were your overall thoughts from Arrighetti's debut in the major leagues?
Well, I really think, you know, for Arrighetti's case, they brought him up a lot sooner than what they intended. I don't think they wanted him up this soon, but with injuries, you didn't have a choice. I mean, his first two innings were good. He just wasn't placing the ball in the right place. And it's all about location, location, location with pitchers. And when you're not missing bats, but you are hitting the strike zone and they're squaring everything up, then there's not a whole lot you could do. I think Arrighetti was brought up prematurely out of necessity, but I think Arrighetti is a guy that's going to figure it out. The other guy who came up, Blair, that was an emergency start for that kid. He was not even on the radar to come up to the big leagues, and, you know, a tough outing against the Rangers. But I think Arrighetti, he probably gets another start for sure, and he probably performs better, just because he's got really good stuff. He's going to examine things. I've met the kid. I've interviewed the kid. He's got a good head on his shoulders, and he's all about the business, and he's all about helping put his team in a position to win. And so I would like to think that next time Arrighetti gets on the mound that he performs better than he did in his Major League debut.
We're talking with the man who's known as H-Town Wheelhouse. He's seemingly at every Houston Astros game. He's giving you content on podcasts, on television, on streams. He's everywhere. I'm fully expecting you to have a billboard out on Interstate 10 when you enter Houston, my friend. So Those are all positive things. I want to go back to the negative because there's a lot of negative here with the Stros. Alex Bregman, we thought when we talked with you on opening day inside Minute Maid Ballpark, which was an amazing experience, we thought Bregs was locked in. We thought we could see him not have his traditional sluggish start because he had been hitting the ball and seeing it so well in spring training, yet he is off to a dreadful start, only overshadowed by the first baseman. Any concern about Bregs and him never getting back to that level that we saw when he was an MVP candidate?
Well, you know me, I always got to put a positive spin on something, and he actually did connect with the baseball a little bit more solidly in Kansas City. You know, he was a part of the outburst of hits they had, but they didn't bring any runs around and score anybody. And so you can get solid doubles all day, but if your solid doubles aren't also producing runs, but in their only once every like six or seven games, then yeah, there is a concern there. Bregman, I think, has fallen victim to also his watchful eye of the strike zone. He's gone down looking a few times. He usually is walking a little bit higher clip. And he's just going to have to go out there and do it. All the work he's put in, I mean, if you go to YouTube, you can see his – I think he's got a page called like Nemesis Baseball, where he tracks all his off-season stuff. And so, I mean – the bill says that he should be hitting 295, 285, but the product is not showing that. So I don't know if it's a mental lapse for him. I don't know what's going on, but pitchers have really good plans. Catchers have really good plans against him, and he's going to have to counter that because he's got the Rangers and the Braves next, and it doesn't get any easier because they still have a ton of games in not that many days.
He's on the struggle bus, but you do have Alvarez and Altuve who have started off the season extremely well. How long do you believe that those two guys can kind of carry the load and let the rest of the lineup kind of figure it out?
Well, you know, I think you got them too, and you also have Yiner Diaz who's hitting really, really, really well. I think those three have got to carry it right now until they figure out how to. I mean, the only thing I've seen is, you know, I've seen a lot of people criticize Espada for putting Alvarez at the two hole. Well, they're like, because he's not getting chances to drive people in. If he's your only RBI guy, would he consider moving Alvarez down to give an opportunity for two or three more guys to be on base? But then again, Altuve, I think, is 0 for 9 or 1 for 9 or something with runners in scoring position. So those three guys have to keep hitting, and Kyle Tucker has got to get off the snide. Kyle Tucker looks good at the plate. He's hitting the ball hard. He's barreling balls up, but he's hitting them right in the gloves. Pena's hitting pretty decently this year. So you've got this team where they're good and they're almost good enough. They're just not getting it done. At the end of the day, you've got to go with Coach Chancey's philosophy. My dad said, if you have eight hits, you should have eight runs. Now, it never worked out that way, but you should never have 13 hits and three runs. That has absolutely got to be fixed. So they've got to come up with a better counter plan for opposing pitchers for the other guys to pick up. But watch out, because if they keep doing this, Pedro Leon has learned to hit doubles. He's not just hitting home runs, and Joey Loperfido is killing the long ball. So you've got some guys in AAA who are chomping at the bit. I'm not saying they come up today or tomorrow, but if they continue to struggle, you may see some prospects come up, and that may be the spark this team needs.
I want to get you out of here with this, brother, because I'm going to go out on a limb, and I don't want to assume because you know what our fathers told us about doing that, but you mentioned your pops, and, you know, if there was a birthday celebration dinner and you got to choose whatever you could have, and their options were steak, go to a tremendous steakhouse, maybe some boiled crawfish, you know, us in Southwest Louisiana, you know, we love that. Or would it be sushi? What would your papa do and what would you do?
Well, I would go crawfish because, you know, I lived in Louisiana for 2 years, and especially if it's being prepared by someone in Louisiana, why would you not go that route? I think my dad would go steak. Sushi, if my dad thought some fancy people were coming over, he'd probably pick sushi just to impress the guests. But we're definitely going crawfish and then steak in that order.
Brett, thank you. You're allowed to come back onto our show as many times as you'd like moving forward. Our guy James Mesh, he chooses to have sushi on his birthday for a big fancy dinner. Not steak, not boiled crawfish. No. He goes with the sushi. And Dawson Arslow is a big sushi guy, too. He debated about choosing that over steak as well. So thank you for bringing some sanity to our airwaves today. I appreciate you.
Yeah, you're welcome. And, look, the bottom line is if I can get sushi at HEB just as quickly as I can get sushi at a restaurant, I'm going with steak or crawfish.
Thank you, brother. Enjoy your weekend. Hopefully the Stros will get some wins.
Yes, sir.
That's Brett Chansey. He's from the Locked on Astros podcast and about 18 other entities. My man's got his fingers in everything. He did answer the poll question correctly. We'll get an update on that courtesy of our guy BP. If Dawson Arslow allows him to do so when we come back after this timeout.
I just wanted to give you an update here out at Walk-Ons on College Saloon. We've got the live changing of the letters on the big board out front. This is exciting to watch. And maybe there's some new specials and we'll tell you about them if they change.
We'll also give you an update on the Masters as well. So much coming up. You're listening to ESPN Southwest Louisiana Sports Station.
You're listening to ESPN 103.7 Lafayette and 104.1 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station, and your home for the LSU Tigers.
Max Homa just narrowly missed a birdie putt. Looks like he's going to clean up for par and remain the solo leader. That's because Bryson DeChambeau dropped a shot a couple of holes back. Now, DeChambeau has an approach coming up here. He's going to have a chance to get back to seven, but for now, your leader is Max Homa at 7 under par. That would be popular among the tour. Max Homa, of course, one of the more popular golfers in this next wave. We did give you some updates on the poll question, but we hadn't gotten to the comments yet. So let's do that right now, BP, back in the EVCO Development Studios. What are the people saying about today's foodie poll question of the week?
So I think my favorite one so far is coming from Boxcar Bergeron. He said, nice steak, medium rare, loaded potato, grilled asparagus, pecan pie a la mode for dessert. Sushi sounds like the choice of someone who test drives a Corvette for their birthday instead of buying one. So a little shot
fair
at our James Mesh. A little shot.
James, do you have a response?
I do it again.
There we go.
I do it again.
And then we've got we got Tina Howell saying Cajun po' boy sushi roll. That's a lot coming at you right there.
Okay, Tina Howell, friend of the program. I can get on board with that because that's the other thing about sushi. It's so versatile. I mean, you have so many different things you could go. Again, one thing, the stigma, it's raw fish. Well, of course, there's plenty of cooked options, and those are usually signified on the menu. You got ones with crab meat. You got fried shrimp rolls. I mean, the people in Southwest Louisiana should appreciate a good fried shrimp roll. And how about this? The combination, it's something I used to get at the place that I used to frequent on the West Bank of New Orleans all the time. Their crawfish roll is fantastic. It's a crawfish sushi roll. Now we got both.
I will eat a fried bologna sandwich before I eat sushi. Done.
It's just, there's haters in anything you do in life.
There's just so much negativity coming from the right side of the table.
The good thing is the next time I sit down to, here's the other thing about sushi. I'm always the one who has to push against it because my fiance would eat sushi every meal the rest of her life if she was given the opportunity to. So I'm always the one that's like, not sushi again. Let's do something else. Let's do something else. But I will never have to, not have it for any extended period of time because if she's given the choice of where she's going to eat, that's where it's going to be. So I also have that aspect of it. But my whole point here was the next time I enjoy it, the good thing for me is I'm not going to have those naysayers in my mind. Just like a great player can overcome the negativity, the Astros have done it for so long now after the scandal. Jose Altuve doesn't let that seep in. I'm going to be the same way with my enjoyment of what I think is a fantastic Japanese delicacy.
Oh, well, shout out to you. Shout out to you. I mean, look, you can block out the naysayers, and you can try to be the Houston Astros, but your food choices make you more like the Chicago White Sox. So,
Just saying. That's tough.
Wow.
As of now, there's not a whole lot of difference in those records, honestly.
So have you guys, by the way, this is not breaking news. Are we breaking news about your what's going to be going on in 2025 for you? That's
no,
not well
it's
known.
Not breaking.
Okay,
no.
Okay. No. So, for all the ladies listening, D'Lo is off the market. Okay, he's engaged. Nuptials have been planned for 2025. So, look, if you're single and you're ready to mingle, James Mesh is still available.
There you go.
Not to worry. So, Well, just shift your focus to the man with the best head of hair. And look, he just did a little bit of a cocked eyebrow for the Zoom call, too. He was like, hey, what's up? these are the things that he learns from Jerry Holberg, the blonde bomber, who's going to be on after us from 1 to 3. So are you going to have you figured out your menu yet for the wedding reception, and does it involve sushi?
Yeah, since you love it so much. Funny story. Won't get into the details of it. There was a whole venue issue, place closing down. Whole plans had to be changed. So originally did have the menu set, and it did not feature sushi. But now the menu's back up in the air. So I don't know. Maybe we'll talk about that.
There's options out there.
Maybe that's possible.
I'm just letting you know now, not to try to sway your decisions on what your menu should be, because it's your special day with your lady.
Right.
I guess you want to go with a fried bologna sandwich.
But if sushi is on the menu and that's my only choice to eat at your wedding reception, I may not come, and you may not get a gift in the mail.
I'm
just letting you know now.
If sushi's a part of it,
I have to stand on principles.
I will say if it was a part of it, it would not be the main dish. It would be something off to the peripheral. You can rest assured there. But
All right.
Yeah, all things considered, I'm not handling a lot of those decisions, to be honest with you. So
so your fiance, your soon-to-be wife, who would eat sushi every day if you let it, is the one that's going to be in charge of the decision. So, James, that sure does sound like to me that sushi is going to be on the menu for the wedding, does it not?
I will say, though, again,
there's definitely a non-0% chance that it happens.
The first draft, though, it wasn't there. So maybe, I don't know, maybe she'll change her mind. We'll see.
All right.
Still waiting on the invite.
What's that?
Still waiting on the invite.
Yeah, well, obviously they haven't been sent out yet. The wedding's a year and a half away, Blake. You don't have to worry. Anyway.
Says BP. BP says he still hasn't got his invite.
As I try to bring us back to earth here, DeChambeau had a long look for birdie. He came up short. Looks like he's going to stay at 6-under. Scottie Scheffler just about set to get ready to tee off. And at that point, you'll kind of know. There's a chance that Scottie kind of runs away with this thing. I will say that. That's still in play here. But it's going to take an impressive second round again. The weather, the wind kind of picking up, the firmness of the greens.
His putter, though, is the huge wild card in all
this.
I agree with you. His game, he's the world's best golfer right now. But his putter comes and goes. And on a day where it's playing a little bit faster, right, and the sun is out and they're having really good weather, he's going to have to make sure that putter's locked in, because he could distance himself and be the second-round leader and give himself a little bit of a cushion, because we've already seen Bryson, give a stroke back. But the putter's got to be on point for Scotty, and it's come and gone in actual tournaments. Like, he'll have it for one round and not have it for another.
And worth noting, too, I've heard that the winds are only going to pick up. The afternoon wave should actually even have a little bit more of a difficult version of this course. As tough as it already played in the first portion of the day, Scotty's going to be facing the teeth of those winds when they're at their peak in the afternoon. So
he's going to tee off in approximately 20 minutes from right now. Is when Scotty's.
He's one of the latest tee times out there. So, you got a couple, Cameron Smith
and Victor, they'll be going after him. But that'll be your last group. Wyndham Clark is part of that last group as well. That's going to be at 1 o'clock. Once again, the projected cut line for the Masters still sits at +2. So some golfers.
And I saw it got to 3 and then went back down. So a couple of birdies have been made. Again, keep in mind for the Masters, they keep the top 50 and anyone tied for it. So anyone who's tied for 47th, because right now you have, 6 golfers tied for 47th, they would all make it. It would be 53 players that made the cut. But anybody outside of that top 50 is not going to make it right now.
So right now you're looking at former Masters champ Vijay Singh. Well, he always gets in because he's a Masters champion, but he hasn't been a competitive golfer in a long time. Shane Lowry, the Irishman, he's at +3. Zach Johnson, former Masters champion and Ryder Cup captain, he's at +3 as well. And you look down the list, Charles Schwartzel, Gary Woodland are both at +4. Matt Tsuzama, who I liked as a guy this week, but he came out and shot a 76 in the opening round. Woof. +4 by him. Ricky Fowler, that's your guy. The winning the par 3 contest, Kiss of Death, looks like it's going to continue at +5. Not great. Justin Rose, a former Masters champion as well, +6. Keegan Bradley, a guy that you liked. I thought his game looked good too, but he was 78. He's at +7. Sam Burns, Jordan Spieth, also at +7. Bubba Watson, former champ, +9. DJ, +10. So you have some significant names that are already in danger of missing the cut, and that cut line could move, which could impact far more players out there. We got to take a timeout. What do we got coming up next, boys?
I mean, what do we not have coming up next? Let's take a look at some of the college baseball series that'll be impacting the teams we cover.
Oh, you know what?
Because there's some big ones.
We'll do that. We'll talk a little college baseball, McNeese, Raging Cajuns, and LSU. But if you want to call the Mike's Marine Hotline, it's a beautiful day. Feel free to do so. Mike's Marine Hotline, 337-706-0111. That's 337-706-0111. Mike's Marine keeping you on the water. You're listening to RP3 D'Lo Mesh as we broadcast live from Walk-On's on Collie Saloon. You're listening to ESPN Southwest Louisiana Sports Station.
Go check out our YouTube channel at ESPN_SWLA for the latest episodes of Miguez Mindset, Over Par, and so much more. That's ESPN Southwest Louisiana Sports Station on YouTube.
We welcome you back into RP3 D'Lo and Mesh here. A couple segments left in our week. We are at Walk-On's on Collie Saloon, as we are each and every Friday. Again, we've been hanging out watching the Masters here on the television screen. Some really tough shots. This course is biting back. One of those days where Augusta National kind of reminds you that it's not a par 67, despite Bryson DeChambeau claiming as much a few years back. It's been interesting to see. Obviously, we saw the last couple of years the rivalry, so to speak, between LIV players and tour players. And, you know, when Koepka got back into contention and won again, you know, people wondering if that was going to be the norm. And, look, it's another year where you have some guys at the top that play on the LIV Tour, and Bryson DeChambeau leads the way right now for them. Now, they don't have a ton of guys up there. You got some tour players, Max Homa, Scottie Scheffler, Nicholas Tojgaard, who I got to watch a little bit at the Zurich Classic last year. Got to watch. Yeah. He played with his countrymen in that event, so that was cool to see. He's one of the kind of rising, really talented players, and he's at 5-under. Just a pedestrian day for him so far today, even par. But, again, even par with the way that course is playing is going to be a pretty good score to put in your back pocket. I think you'll walk away with that feeling pretty good. So if he's able to stay there, then we'll see. Another player, Danny Willett. You forget about Danny as a past Masters champion, but he is. And the Englishman had a great story. They ran a feature of it. I was watching live from the Masters last night, and Golf Channel did a great job on that. He had some really devastating injuries, and there were some real doubts about, you know, his futures in the game and certainly for this tournament. But he got out there, and, of course, yesterday fired a 4-under 68, put himself right in the mix. He's struggling a little bit. He's already 2-over through 7 holes. But it's always great for me, the storylines that evolve, and that's why golf is so great. There's never not something to be keeping your eye on storyline-wise throughout a field like this. And right now, as you look at the top 10, there's a lot of guys that would check that box, and we'll see how this continues to develop. And, again, for me, you take a look at what Scottie Scheffler is going to do with that 12:48 tee time. Can he fight off the winds? If he battles through the conditions that they have right now and shoots 2-3 under par, I think he's going to firmly establish himself as the clear favorite going into the weekend. But if he struggles the way this course can do to you and he stays right around where he is, we could have a really, really wide open weekend where, you know, 15, 20 guys are within 2 or 3 shots of the lead.
When you look at the leaderboard, obviously Max and Bryson are at the top, and Scottie's yet to tee off once again. He'll tee off in 10 minutes from right now at 12:48. How about a guy like Cameron Davis? I'm looking at guys that are just on the outside, and I know he didn't have a great second round. He was even today.
But again, I think today an even's a good score today.
Yes, even's a good score today. You know, we love to look at guys like leading, you know, all the rounds and going, you know, tee to tee, so to speak. But I look at someone like Cameron Davis. Cameron Young is another one, right? You mentioned Danny Willett. You know, I just Colin Morikawa, he's, you know, through 9 today. He's even par. He's at 1-under. Yeah, obviously, all those guys, Tony Finau, who I, you know, openly root for. I like him. He is, you know, you go and you look at this list, you're going to need some help. You're going to need Homa. You're going to need Bryson. You're going to need Scottie to give you some shots back to make it only like a 3 or 4 stroke disadvantage, so to speak, Dawson. But I don't know. It'll be interesting to see. I think it all depends on what Scottie does today. If Scottie goes out there and is able to tame the beast with the conditions, the way it's playing, and he can maintain and have like a 2 or 3 stroke lead going into the weekend, he's going to be extremely tough to beat. He really is. And I have more confidence in him holding on to that lead than I would Bryson. And that's not a knock on DeChambeau. It's just Bryson tends to give strokes back. It's just his game, right? So,
and he's changed that a little bit. It's been interesting. And obviously, honestly, I've seen a lot less of Bryson. I've seen more Bryson DeChambeau YouTube golf than I have competitive golf because he's on the LIV Tour. And
correct.
It's just not appointment viewing for me. But I've watched him interact with people. I think he has, you know, in a way it reminds me a little bit of Will Wade. I know that's not the comparison you were expecting. I think it's a guy who came out and had a lot of brash takes on what he was doing and had a lot of different opinions, a lot of self-centeredness there. And I think you've seen a real reset for Bryson over the last couple of seasons. And I'm not saying he's a completely different guy. I don't know. Look, I don't know him personally. Maybe he is still, you know, completely arrogant. But I really think you've seen some reflectiveness. And, you know, look, going to Live Tour, he took some flack. But those guys have been there for a couple of years now, and it's become who they are. Bryson seems a little bit more, and again, he walked back the comments. He, you know, he talked about how silly it was for him to say the par 67 thing, and how
he,
you know,
he seems a lot more likable. If you watched any of the videos that he did with Instagram Golf Superstar Paige when they got together,
Paige Brannick,
he seemed a lot more down to earth, right? He seemed to kind of be self deprecating as well, like he understands what it's all about. But I need to know if this is true or not.
Okay,
that. He, with 3D printed irons that he designed and got approved.
Yeah, so I heard
that's
that
a
is,
real thing.
I heard that is. So Bryson's been working on that for a long time, and I had heard that he just got it done with the USGA like a week or two ago, like getting the final approval, making sure they were up to specs and standards for the tour. Supposedly that's a real thing. So he's got these new irons that he's been kind of working on. Again, he's a mad scientist. And that's the other thing I was talking about. Look, he went and it was all – he was obsessed with the distance, right? And he's going to cut every par five. He's going to take every aggressive angle.
And he bulked up, right? He got very aggressive with the workout.
He basically said, I was wrong at some point. He kind of said, I just couldn't do it consistently enough. And so he walked it back. And now he's kind of gotten into a leaner build. And he's, you know, not focusing on hitting every ball as far as he possibly can, working a little bit more precision. It's kind of funny, the golf aspect of the hunt for velocity, right? When we see in baseball, we're talking about that a lot with the injuries right now. Golf's kind of headed in the other direction in some areas. Now, look, guys like Rory are still blasting it down the fairway 330, 340 yards down, so don't get me wrong. But it does feel like there's been a little bit of a hesitancy to go all the way in where DeChambeau was for a couple years, where it's like, I don't care what happens. I am trying to get every last yard off the tee to make everything easier for myself. He's not doing that anymore, and he's playing better. I mean, he's playing better than he was.
He forgot to work on the other part of his game instead of just blasting the ball off the tee box. He forgot about working on his short game in particular. So we'll see there. Let's shift gears a little bit to talk about college baseball. Big series. We chatted with Jim Gazzola of the Lake Charles American Press earlier on today's show about Incarnate Word and how big of a series that is for the Mid-East Cowboys to start kind of turning things around, because right now they're tied at the bottom of the overall Southland Conference standings with Incarnate Word. So they need to turn things around. But let's talk about the Raging Cajuns. You know, they suffered their first loss in a long time as they had their nation-leading winning streak get snapped by Louisiana Tech, a team with a good RPI, so not necessarily, as we talked about the other day, not a terrible loss by any stretch of the imagination. And they have now a weekend series where they can maintain their pole position as the best team in the Sun Belt Conference. Marshall isn't very good, we know this, but as we've pointed out numerous times, we've seen teams sneak up on teams that were far superior in take a game from them, as ULM did against Coastal Carolina, who at the time was ranked in the top 25. What do we make of this matchup that's going to be at the Teague this weekend as the Thundering Herd comes to town for a three-game set?
Yeah, and it's funny, too. I haven't watched a ton of Marshall, but when I look at their results and kind of have looked into some of their series and seen them a little bit, I don't think they're the worst team in the conference. I don't think they're close to it. I think they're pretty they're in the middle for me. Even though the record isn't what it, you know, what it could be, they just beat a West Virginia team in the midweek, which was a big RPI win for them. They're up closer to 150 than they are 200 now, which is important. I think they're better than Arkansas State. The only thing is, the only team that's beaten the Cajuns in conference play this year is Arkansas State, and they had tons of trouble in all three of those games. They were lucky to win two of them.
Yep.
And yet, I think the Red Wolves have proved to be one of the worst teams in the conference. So it's just that, again, it's baseball, right? I think Marshall's better than that team is, but they really struggle away from home. They have not played well at all this year. I think they're a combined 2-15 in road/neutral site games. They have not scored runs the way they have at home. They have not pitched the way they have at home when they've been away from their ballpark, which is the newly opened Jack Cook Field over in Huntington, West Virginia. But they've got a left-hander named Blevins who's going to start tomorrow. They're pitching backwards, and this is a strategy. You see it a little bit in college baseball. They have a legit ace who's one of the best pitchers in the conference, and they said, you know what, we're not going to throw him against Andrew Herman, the Cajuns' ace on Friday night. We're going to throw him on Saturday instead. So they're trying to kind of get a little strategic, a little gamesmanship there, throwing him backwards, and we'll see if that works for them. But for the Cajuns, that means you got to get tonight's game because you're not facing their best pitcher. And you do have your guy who's been just fantastic. Herman's been so solid. Now, look, Chase Morgan's been really solid as well in the rest of the weekend, and we'll see if Carson Fluno can continue to progress. But, no, I think if you play solid, sound, fundamental baseball, you should win this series. Again, I think sweeps are lagniappe in college baseball for almost any of them outside of a couple of really weak opponents. So I think your goal should be to take two out of three, and if you're going to lose one, tomorrow when they toss their ace is the one you're okay with losing. Again, you're not okay, right, but tonight's an important game. You got to get off to a good start for the Cajuns. And the interesting thing about it, you talk about how big a series is. Cajuns have done themselves some favors and not bought themselves any mulligans, so to speak. But, you know, they lose this series, it's not the end of the world. They're still going to be in first place in the conference largely. LSU baseball, not the same. They need this one. And they're heading to Knoxville to face, I mean, a really, really good Tennessee team. Not sure if they're as good as those Tony Vitello teams from a couple of years ago that, you know, were supposed to go to Omaha. Remember, they were the number one seed, didn't make it to Omaha. But shifting up the rotation a little bit with Gage Jump throwing on Friday instead of Luke Coleman, what do you make of that?
It's Jay Johnson's way of trying to secure a series victory, right? So you're going to throw Gage out there and you
– So it's kind of what Marshall's doing in a way,
correct.
Right? Throwing backwards a little bit.
So you throw your lefty tonight and hope that your bats can wake up to get a win because you know – that Holman, Luke Holman, the Alabama transfer that's came in, that's been your Friday night starter for the majority of the season, that you feel a little bit more, maybe more comfortable with him going on Saturday, and that gives you the best chance possible of being able to win the series. So they'll go Gage Jump tonight, Holman on Saturday, and LSU starter on Sunday is yet to be announced. Now, the interesting thing about this, and this was just last night, that this was posted courtesy of NOLA.com and The Advocate, that Tennessee has not announced its starter for Friday, but will start their right-hander, Drew Beam, on Saturday, and their left-hander, Seacrest, on Sunday. So they're changing up, it looks like, their rotation a little bit now. With Gage Jump, he allowed 4 earned runs and 5 1/3 innings last Friday against Vandy, the second game of that series that began on Thursday. And then Holman surrendered the same amount of earned runs, 5 2/3 on Thursday. So
yeah, and just lastly, before we get to the break, our guy Ryan Schumpert, friend of the program who covers the Vols over there for Rocky Top Insider, he has said that Chris Stamos, the lefty, is going to be the starter tonight.
So we have lefty on lefty.
Yeah, announced about 2 hours ago. So the Vols, again, kind of similar. Some gamesmanship here in the rotation decisions,
correct,
by both coaches.
So we'll see what happens. I guess my question is this – is this a must-win series for the LSU baseball team for their season?
Well, and I thought last week was more must-win, to be honest with you, and then they didn't. So it's kind of, well, I guess the next one has to be also, but it's circumstance-wise. Look, you're going on the road to face one of the best teams in the country at their place, so I don't know how you could expect them to win that series. I do think it was fair, even though Vandy's a top-10 team, to think back at the box, the momentum, the crowd behind you, you get that series win. So I don't know. It's kind of a – They've got to win a series at some point, right? And we did talk with, you know, Koki Riley on Footnotes the other day, and based on the way the SEC is, you have so many chances to get marquee series wins. So even if you don't this week, if you start playing well next week, well, you've still got time.
Well, so, not marquee series, because I don't think Alabama and Auburn and Ole Miss are anywhere near where they've been in the past. Your opportunities to get a marquee series win over a top 10 opponent is about to come to an end, right? That you have to do it this weekend. If you don't do it this weekend, you could still win series and try to get – but you know, the whole thing to get into an NCAA regional for most SEC teams is to get into that 14-win threshold in conference play. If you don't win this series this weekend, you're going to make it really, really hard on
yourself. I'd say this. I think RPI-wise, they're going to end up having enough regardless, and I think they'll get into the regionals. There will be a conversation to be had if they lose a couple of those series against teams that aren't great to be worried about that. If this team's going to, in some way, turn this thing around and look anywhere like the team we thought they were going to be preseason, then it's a must-win series. So maybe I can answer your question that way. If they don't beat this Tennessee team, then yeah. No matter what they accomplish, I think hosting is – almost out the window, you know.
Again, that way.
Now we say that if they rattle off 12 in a row in the SEC, well, then certainly we'll have to reevaluate. But yeah, it's going to be tough for them, and they need it.
It's going to be tough. Quick update from the Masters: Max Homa dropped a shot on the last hole, a bogey there. So now we have a 4-way tie. It's off the leaderboard with Homa, DeChambeau, Scheffler, and Højgaard. So yet Scotty's yet to tee off. That's the big part. He's part of that group.
Right about
Rory
now.
McIlroy and others, they're teeing off right now on hole one. So we'll keep you updated with that. We got to take a timeout. When we come back, we'll get an update on the poll question of the day, and we can set up for the Jordy Holtberg Show. You're listening to RP3 D'Lo and Mesh as we broadcast live from Walk-Ons on Collie Saloon. This is ESPN Southwest Louisiana Sports Station.
Let your voice be heard. Give us a call on the Mike's Marine Hotline at 337-706-0111. Brought to you by Mike's Marine, keeping you on the water. So speak your mind and call the hotline, 337-706-0111. This is ESPN, 1037 Lafayette and 1041 Lake Charles, Southwest Louisiana's sports station.
It's just shaping up as one of those days. Augusta National's biting back, as it tends to do, when those winds pick up and the greens firm up. As we mentioned it there, Homa dropping a shot. You're seeing a lot of safer plays here as the famed walks throughout Amen Corner take place. And I think we're going to have a really good weekend. Again, it's funny, too. We keep saying this. It's all dependent on if Scotty decides this is his tournament. The only thing that might be able to slow him down is his wife. And when I say that, I mean because he has already vowed if she goes into labor, he will leave the tournament in any condition Correct. That he's in. Now, I don't think she's due for another week or two, so it's pretty unlikely, but you never do know. And I saw some people crafting some fake emails suggesting that they were going to email Augusta National and pretend to be Meredith Scheffler and say that they needed to tell Scotty to leave right away. But I think the funny thing is, too, you're already starting to see it a little bit. I've seen it on a lot on social media. People are starting to root against it, right? Against Scheffler going, I don't want Scheffler to run away with this thing. You know, we saw a little bit that, of course, once Tiger started taking off, you know, it became, all right, well, if he's going to run away with these tournaments, I'm going to root against
There's still plenty of golf left. I mean, literally.
Oh, yeah. He hasn't even teed off on his set. Yeah,
They've teed off. He's in the fairway here on hole one while Schauffele and Rory McIlroy are both on the right side bunker. There, so that's Schauffele there trying to get out of the bunker. Rory will be next, I do believe. So there's still plenty of golf left. And once again, Scotty's putter has been, you know, hit and miss. So if his putter's on, there's no one that can beat him. I mean, he's just that good. It's just how that works. I will say this interesting tidbit here while we have a few minutes, that the whole coaching carousel in men's college basketball all began with SMU. Like, if SMU doesn't fire Rob Lanier, who almost immediately gets hired at Rice, then we won't have what we've had happen here, right? Because Andy Enfield left USC to take the SMU job. And then Eric Musselman departed Arkansas to replace Enfield at USC. And then John Calipari exits Kentucky to replace Musselman at Arkansas. And Mark Pope leaves BYU to go to his alma mater, Kentucky. So it's just like, all because SMU didn't think the guy who had led them to some success was good enough to be their head coach. You don't have everything that's happened. It's kind of funny how that works out. Let's head out back to the EVCO Development Studios. Bring on BP for our final update on the poll question of the day here on our show. BP, quickly, give us the results, bud.
Yes, sir. So steak is actually getting a little bit more of the vote, 56.5%. Crawfish, 17.7%. Sushi, 14.5%. And other at 11.3% of the vote.
Thank you, bud. You did great today. Enjoy your weekend. I want to thank our guest, Brett Chansey of the Locked On Astros podcast, for joining us, talking all things Stros. Jim Cozzolo from the Lake Charles American Press, talking all things McNeese Cowboys. We'll be back on Monday from 11 to 1. Our guy Dawson won't be here as he'll be taking part in the Redbird Ministries golf scramble. He's part of the Delta Media team, so there'll be no D-Lo on the airwaves on Monday for our show, but we'll be back on 11 to 1. Until then, be safe out there. Be kind to one another. The Jordy Holtberg Show with the Blonde Bomber himself, Uncle Jordy, up next right here on ESPN Southwest Louisiana Sports Station.